We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Saints were listed as questionable. Two are out ahead of the Saints' regular season finale at home against the Atlanta Falcons. Welcome back to New Orleans Football. I'm Brooke Kirchhoffer. He's Nick Underhill, Mike Triplett, breaking down this last regular season game. The injury bug and sickness bug has just kind of taken over the Saints this year, and it's kind of circled back. Sounds like the flu is going around with the Saints a little bit, but that could severely affect their run game. We're going to get into that and much more in today's show.
Yeah, they got people sniffing like Tyrone Biggums in that locker room with the sickness. So we'll see how that goes. Presented by PJ's Coffee. And if you need a new car, make sure you check out my guy, Matt Bowers. He has dealerships all over the state, all over the region, any type of car you want. Best prices, best customer care. He'll get you in and out of there. Right. All right, let's hit these odds. The New Orleans Dot Football Show is proudly presented by PJ's Coffee. PJ's Coffee has some of the best drinks that you can find. They have locations all over the city. They have pastries and everything else you need to get your day started. So go check them out. Are you looking for the perfect engagement ring? Look no further than Friend & Company Fine Jewelers' new engagement salon. This new area houses a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from in all cuts, sizes, and colors. Their experienced staff offer five-star customer care to help you find the perfect ring to express your love. Visit their new engagement salon today. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the perfect ring for the perfect moment and also for the perfect person. 7713 Maple Street between Adams and Burdett Street. 504-866-5433. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Check them out at friendandcompany.com. Moe's Barbecue is located in Metairie. They have your game day needs taken care of. Whether you're tailgating or watching the black and gold or LSU at home with friends, Moe's has you covered. Order pulled pork, wings, ribs, sides, and more. Come in with the family for lunch and dinner as our kids' meals will please even the pickiest of eaters. Tailgating, parties at home, lunch and dinner, Moe's Barbecue will handle it all. Moe's Original Barbecue, 1101 North Causeway Boulevard between 48th and 49th Street in Metairie. Call 504-407-5333 for your catering order today. 504-407-5333. Moe's Original Barbecue in Metairie. Hard Hide Ponchatoula Strawberry Whiskey is an 86-proof blend of aged wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Ponchatoula strawberries. Blended in New Orleans, it is not for the thin-skinned. Look for it in your favorite stores, bars, and restaurants. New Orleans Stop Football is proud to be sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Make sure you check out their location on Veterans Boulevard. All right, let's get into the show.
Let's get into our lead topic presented by Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the official jewelers of the New Orleans Saints. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers is home to a new engagement salon where they have a wide selection of engagement rings. And while you're there, ask them about their collection of fleur-de-lis earrings and necklace that you see here. They are specially priced for our NOF audience. All right, let's get into the lead topic. Is Kendre Miller going to be active Sunday? He was out at practice today. He had an illness that popped up this morning. He was telling us Wednesday that he felt good enough to play and that he almost sounded like anything could happen and he would play Sunday. But him coming down with what sounds like the flu, it's caught a lot of players this week. Would that prevent him from suiting up on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it's just not Wednesday. I talked to him yesterday. I said, you playing? He's like, yeah, I'm out there, man. I'm fine. I'm coming back. I'm going to play. And I was like, all right, good. Like, Look forward to seeing you out there. And he's like, yeah, look forward to being out there. So yesterday he was planning on playing. He gets sick. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think it's a thing that's worth watching. I mean, other guys have fallen ill on Friday and they were able to play on Sunday. But the question is, this is a guy that hasn't played since week 9. Yeah. So I don't know. Do you think he can play if he doesn't practice on a certain day? Like, is that a bigger deal for him than for somebody else?
The only reason why I think it's something that you have to pay attention to is because we just saw Dennis Allen bench Jordan Howden because he was out, not at practice on Wednesday, but he was at practice on Thursday and Friday last week. He only missed Wednesday due to an illness. So if he was already willing to make the change there with a rookie that he wasn't necessarily 100% confident in and added in Jonathan Abram, which paid off in dividends against the Bucks, I could see them doing that with Kendre. But the only difference here is the depth issue. You can't just have Jamal Williams running the football if Alvin Kamara's out.
Well, obviously, that's the real lead. Mm-hmm. We've just been talking about it all week. Is Alvin Kamara going to play? And it seems really doubtful with an ankle sprain, although Dennis Allen said they're going to give it till the very last second. Alvin Kamara is that valuable to the team. Kendre Miller wouldn't matter if Alvin Kamara was going to play, though. But if you lose Kendre Miller, and too bad for Kendre Miller, I kind of want to know what he looks like.
I know.
And this is going to be an opportunity for him. So, yeah, I don't think he'll be 100% if he does play. So I do think it'll be a lot of Jamal Williams, who had nearly 20 touches in this last game. And certainly is capable of handling that kind of workload. God forbid, though, he gets hurt during the game. And then obviously Taysom Hill, mm-hmm. who should be a part of this run game more than he has been lately. You counted him. I mean, they have Jordan Mims and James Robinson on the practice squad. I'm guessing we're going to see one of them come up for depth purposes on Saturday, whether Kendre Miller's going to play or not. But the illness track record, when guys have had illness Friday, they've still typically played Sunday. So I think he'll be active, but it's hard to believe we're going to get his 100% best.
The good thing is if, you know, miss him Friday, he just missed red zone. Mm-hmm. So he still got first down and second down and third down.
And apparently they practice red zone on Thursdays now too. So he didn't miss all of it.
He touched on a little bit of it. So like there is some background there, but like I think, you know, it is something worth watching to see how involved he is in the game because, again, he hasn't played since week 9. Like, this isn't just like a pick up and go guy. But yeah, I think they have to try to play him. I mean, there's only X amount of run schemes. If you know, outside zone, inside zone, power.
A lot like, different than the stuff. Jordan Howden situation where he got benched from being the starting safety because he missed a Wednesday practice to being a running back who could have a package that you're comfortable with.
Yeah, so we'll see.
We'll see what happens. We'll also see how the Saints play this weekend. Can they play like they have nothing to lose because they don't control their own fate? Well, also avoiding getting in their own way. The reason why we pose this question this way is because the Saints have been so up and down. Can they at least just build on the coaching, the player execution, the quarterback play, the secondary showing up, all of those things, move it into another week, play like that back-to-back weeks while not letting kind of your emotions and the rivalry and with the season on the line, all those things get in the way?
Yeah, I mean, it's the most dangerous thing in the world is to try to project like where the Saints are. And, oh, they looked good last week, so they're going to look good this week. That hasn't been the case with this team for years. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some genuine things that I believe in. I believe in, you know, I wrote about it this week. I believe the Derek Carr, Chris Olave connection is better than it's ever been. And that started with the last game against Atlanta. So I like where they're at and a healthy Rashid Shaheed. I think their passing game, the offensive line, the pass protection has been better. I think the Saints passing game is probably in the best state it's been in all season. And that's gradually gotten better as the season's gone along. But I mean, just being like, oh, they just beat Tampa Bay and they're still alive in the playoffs. So they have a lot to play for. I don't know that stuff works with this team. I think it comes down to they're kind of a flawed team that will get in their own way every once in a while. I do think it's been a long time since we've seen like the penalties sabotage them that were sabotaging them in week 12 at Atlanta. I don't know if that's something that can permanently go away. I mean, if the Saints came out and had a stinker, we just saw one 2 weeks ago in LA, they're still capable of that. But in some ways I just don't believe in momentum with this team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Look, I think it's an interesting situation because like they're a team that needs to, you know, play a conservative style of football on offense to be effective. But like, if you get behind, can they air it out? Can they go for it? Can they gun for it? I don't know. Like, there's just a lot of questions still about this team that I feel like need to be answered. I feel like they didn't hit their shot on offense until about 5 weeks ago. And like, it's still like they're doing things now where it's like, oh wait, this could have actually gotten better, but it just took so long to get there. So it's tough to project anything with them. I kind of feel like, I don't know, last week kind of almost felt like a coronation of sorts. And I don't know if that leads to them coming out flat this week because they kind of felt like they they figured it out last week and they were feeling good. And like, I don't know if that leads to momentum or if that leads to like a dud. Like, I don't know, but I know there's a lot of guys fighting to be in the playoffs. There's a lot of guys playing hurt to be in the playoffs. There's a lot of guys that still give a damn. And I don't know. I just kind of feel like the give a damn is going to prevail here. So like, I kind of feel like they're going to come out and play okay this week.
Well, here's three things that they did well against the Tampa Bay Bucks. They blocked well. They called a good game on both sides of the ball.
First time
And they
ever.
Also got their tight ends involved. But on the flip side of that, here's three things that did not go well in Atlanta. You had brought up one of them that I had on this list. I'm just grouping penalties along with turnovers.
Yeah.
It's a big reason why. The second thing, they went 0 for 5 in the red zone.
It was abysmal. Yeah. It was worse than that.
It was abysmal.
Like 0 for 8 inside the 35, too. It was their rock bottom game.
And I probably should have put this as number one and not number three. Couldn't stop the run. Gave up 228 yards. Desmond Ridder was able to elude the pocket, make plays happen. Now, Taylor Heinicke, we're going to get into that in our matchups today, but the steps the Saints have taken from that week 12 loss to the week 17 win against the Tampa Bay Bucks, they don't even sound like they're the same team. So maybe, but because it's been so rocky, I just don't know if this team can find consistency this late.
I feel differently about two of those things on the list. The offense, first of all, that offense gained 444 yards. They got into Atlanta territory in almost every possession. They
couldn't
got to
finish.
The 35, I think, 7 of their last 8 possessions, and then it was just disaster. It was usually a lot of penalties, a lot of the pick six. But I believe the Saints offense can score against this defense. Atlanta's defense is not overwhelming in any category. The Saints did prove they can gain yardage against them. They tore him up with Chris Olave. He left at halftime. Rashid Shaheed left that game early. They got both of them healthy for this game. I think the Saints will do better on offense. And I think some of that was fluky. And the Saints' red zone numbers since then, they went 10 of 11 after that game on their next 11 trips. So I think that stuff's improved. But the run defense, I have no evidence that the Saints are a better run defense than they were 6 weeks ago. And I know Atlanta's going to keep testing them. Mm-hmm. And even if the Saints do good in the first quarter, Atlanta's going to keep running this entire game, no matter what. And Atlanta, they knew that last time, and they had no answers for it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think they're a completely different team than they were in that last Atlanta game. So
having
healthy guys, I don't think Olave's healthy. Some of the stuff I saw in practice, I feel like maybe he's a little bit less healthy than he was before. But like, he's fighting through it. He'll probably get that, you know, shot up or whatever he needs to do to play, because like, he's dedicated to making it happen.
Well, remember, a lot of the injuries that the team is facing now was from that Week 12 loss to the Falcons. I believe that's where Cam's injury came. Rashid Shaheed left that game. Some guys were banged up and played through it, like Alante Taylor. I believe Juwan Johnson like had something going on. He played through it. Jamal Williams, Eric McCoy. The list went on and on and on as far as injuries. And here's the injury report from Friday's practice. Like I mentioned, pretty lengthy. Juwan Johnson is questionable to play, still from that chest/shoulder injury he suffered last Sunday in Tampa Bay. Lonnie Johnson still out with a knee injury. Alvin Kamara is questionable with the ankle. Landon Young has officially been ruled out with a knee injury. Colin Saunders is questionable with a concussion. Kendre Miller questionable with the illness. A.T. Perry questionable also with the illness. And J.T. Gray and Peyton Turner both are questionable. Peyton Turner should be up for this game coming back from IR. But J.T. Gray, that's another big one. If the Saints don't have him in special teams, we always like to mention his name when he's on the injury report, because people sometimes forget about these guys on special teams and just how valuable they are. Not just valuable to special teams, he's probably backing up Jonathan Abram at safety, right? And Tyrann Mathieu as well, because you have Jordan Howden and JT Gray, your only
backups.
On the top
four. Yeah, no doubt. But look, he's the key to like making Lou Hedley's punting style work. So if you got no hang time, you need an elite gunner. Yeah, and I mean, that's key to that. And look, I'm gassed to see Peyton Turner get out there and play. Like, I want to see what he can
great
do.
To talk with him today.
It's been so long since he's been on the field, so I have no idea if like what we saw in training camp even applies at this point. Like, whatever he was building, stop building. But like, I don't know, him going out there making a play like would go a long way toward just something. Like, I don't know if it means anything, but if he shows up with the sack, like, it would be just a nice little feel good thing going into the offseason for him.
He was asked, we talked with him today in the locker room, and somebody asked him a great question about, is this game kind of defining your career? Because when you look at it in total, I mean, this is a guy who has dealt with injuries for so long. He's just been itching to get back on the field, but you need to see that production. And he Didn't love the question, which I can understand given he's probably dealt with a lot of criticism on social media of being injured. Of course, the comparison to Marcus Davenport, but the guy is fired up and is ready to get out there. And with that, let's get into our key matchup, starting with the Saints run game versus the Falcons front seven. I'm pretty sure the Saints team, depending on the Saints run game, this could be it. Like, this could be where they win or lose this game, in my opinion. All right, Alvin Kamara is questionable to play Sunday. Kendre Miller has not played in a game since week 9 against the Chicago Bears. If he's up, we don't really know much about him. Like Mike mentioned earlier, he's somebody who's been dealing with injuries. We've seen some spurts of him, but not enough to have full confidence. Jamal Williams hasn't had the best season either. Pretty average, I believe, 23.3 yards per game. He's also not running the ball a whole lot, too, so that number is kind of low for that reason. But the Saints did run the ball decently against Atlanta the last time. Alvin Kamara averaged 4.6 yards per carry. Lynn Bowden, 40 rushing yards. I was kind of surprised to see that in that game. Taysom Hill had 26 rushing yards. That got them to a total of 148. But the Falcons, they haven't given up over 200 rushing yards in a game all season. They ranked 19th in the NFL in run defense. Can the Saints run the ball well enough to get the offense going?
I mean, huge question, because, I mean, Jamal Williams, you mentioned the yards per game. It's 3 yards per carry, which is really bad. I mean, that's really bad. Yeah. And I just haven't seen enough from him to know if he's the guy that they can handle it. I haven't seen enough from Kendre to know if he's the guy, if he can handle it. He's missed a lot of time. He might just not be ready. Taysom's usage is so sporadic that I have no idea if, you know, they can lean on him for X amount and have a plan to build the run game with him. So the thing is, though, is like you need to run the ball well to get everything going. And they're a better team when they're running the ball decently. It helps Derek Carr so much. It backs off the pass rush a little bit. That helps with the pressure. I mean, they need to be able to run to execute their offense the way they need to. And I think that's kind of everything in this game. The success in the last one kind of bodes well. I think Alvin averaging 4.6. I would bet that's probably one of his highest yards per carry of the season. So, I mean, that's something. And they weren't even blocking well at that time. So they're blocking a little bit better. They've gotten a little bit of something going in the run game. But I don't know if it's enough to hang your hat on it, especially if Alvin doesn't play in this game.
Yeah, I think they also ran good enough or decent or whatever those kind of words you want to say last week against Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. It was a little better than fine, I think. But still, those first and 10 runs to running back go nowhere. And it's been that case all season. If the Saints come out and they like impose their will with the run game, it'd be the first time we've seen it all season. So I think the Saints need to be good enough in that department to keep Atlanta honest, to keep Atlanta off the field. But if this game comes down to that being how the Saints win this game, then I wouldn't love their chances.
It's dicey. Another one that's dicey, given he's dealing with a pretty significant ankle injury, even though he's still playing through it. Chris Olave versus AJ Terrell. This was one of those that we didn't necessarily know who was going to be lining up against Chris Olave because they move around so much. But Chris got to over 100 receiving yards in that game against the Atlanta Falcons before he left the game in the third quarter with an injury. Getting to 100, over just over 100 receiving yards was a 51-yard reception. I believe it was on the very first play of the Saints' second drive. So they were able to find some things. Derek Carr able to go deep to Chris Olave. They're definitely going to need that.
Yeah, look.
That here Sunday. But who will he face Sunday in Atlanta?
Yeah, Terrell doesn't shadow typically. And he played on the left side. In that game. But Olave tore them up so bad. Mm-hmm. 7 for 114 in the first half. It was well on its way to being Olave's best game ever as a Saint. Yeah. They had such a good plan for him in that game. That it makes you wonder if Atlanta would shake things up in this matchup and maybe
They started to. So
yeah.
Olave was on the offensive right side. Terrell was on the opposite side of the offensive left side, and they were just eating them up. And then they move him into the slot and they go to the right, and Terrell was staying over there. And then in the third quarter before he got injured, Terrell was starting to go over to the other side, and he was paired up on Chris a few times. There was a target on him. They started to adjust it, and then Chris got hurt. So I wouldn't be surprised to see it come into this game, and they're looking at it that way. I also wouldn't be surprised if they say, you know what, we're going to play our scheme, and this is what we do, and you know, it's on Okuda and all these guys to kind of step up and do it. But they started to adjust because, he was cooking them, and they had to, and he fell out of the game.
That's a big question. Like, of course, Jeff Okuda, also the former Ohio State Buckeye. As we know, Chris Olave went to Ohio State. I'm sure those two know each other very well. Dee Alford and Okuda were really the ones that were mostly against Olave in that matchup. I think Chris Olave will thrive against those two if they keep Terrell kind of on the opposite side. Wherever, if Chris Olave can avoid AJ Terrell, I feel like he can have a better game. Or
no doubt.
Maybe Rashid Shaheed gets those targets then.
If they overcompensate, then I like a healthy Rashid Shaheed and a Rashid Shaheed who's feeling pretty good this week after getting named to the Pro Bowl.
We'll see. I know. Yeah. Congratulations to Rashid Shaheed. All right. Next matchup, Derek Carr versus Falcons pass rush. Got a lot of good answers about the Falcons front seven from center Eric McCoy today and just a lot of things about that. We'll get into that a little bit later. But Derek Carr had a great game last week. His quarterback rating has been solid over their last three games, but can he keep it going against a top 10 passing defense in the Atlanta Falcons?
Man, I hope so for him. I mean, I honestly do think that he's playing better these last five weeks. He's 11th in the league, expected points added per drop back over that span. So, I mean, that's a vast improvement from earlier in the season when he was like hovering around low teens, 20s. So I think that's been something that's been good for him. I think that he started to find a rhythm. Him getting on the same page with Olave, I think, has been a huge benefit to him. You know, things obviously haven't been perfect overall, but he's played a handful of good games. And I think if you end the season on a high note, if you win this game and it, like, looks good, you're going into the offseason on, like, some pretty positive vibes in the locker room. People outside can say whatever, but, like, if they show themselves again that they can play another good game, I think it just changes the whole tenor of the offseason for this team. Whereas earlier it was just like so despondent in there. So I think that things have shifted a little bit, and you know, one more I think would be a huge, huge just benefit for this team.
Yeah, if they do win this game, we will get sick of hearing how they won four of their last five all off season long. But it, you know, it's sort of like the one score game. Hey, we made it a one score game. I mean, there is something to showing the fight that they're showing late in the season and showing the improvements with guys who hadn't worked together. Derek Carr and Juwan Johnson is another combination that has finally come alive after it took a lot longer than we expected it to. Yeah, I mean, I think after they, I don't know, solve their red zone problems, improve their red zone production, I think Derek Carr against pressure was the one area where he still wasn't thriving, but he had a great game. They handled the pressure really well last week. And Atlanta's not really, they do have a top 10 pass defense, but they don't really overwhelm you with their pass rush, I don't think. They're tied for 21st in sacks. They're tied for 28th in takeaways. They're not just this menacing defense that's going to mess you up necessarily, but they're like a fine defense.
And Cam Irving is as solid as a backup right tackle as you can find right now. He was talking to us about how he knows Calais Campbell very well. That bodes well for him this week because he's probably going to see a lot of him. He's expected to get the start at right tackle with Landon Young out. I think that will help. All right, let's get to one of the beasts of this matchup, Bijan Robinson, and how this Saints run defense is going to handle this young rookie who Saints were hoping to get a little piece of that with Kendre Miller. It hasn't necessarily gone that way, but man, Bijan Robinson is a special runner. When the Saints were at their height of struggling to defend the run, Robinson averaged 5.7 yards per carry, and he finished the game with 91 rushing yards himself. And look, the way Atlanta builds their run game just makes it difficult for defenses to defend, kind of stresses them out as a defensive front, and they are eighth right now in rushing offense. That's the Falcons. New Orleans, though, they've looked a little bit better against the run lately. The Saints held the Bucs to 57 rushing yards. They don't really have the best rushing offense over there in Tampa, though. The Rams rushed for 133 yards. The week before that, it was 60 rushing yards against the Giants. He's just such a tough task, Bijan Robinson.
Yeah, so the key to this is getting points on your very first drive and then getting points on your second drive.
Yep.
Yeah, you got to take the run away from them because I think if you're chasing them, they're going to run away from you and they're going to gut the, like, you have to eliminate their ability to run the ball in this game to have a shot. I mean, that's really your best hope because we've seen it all season. They are not a good run defense. They aren't going to get the stops. Like, it's just, at some point it's going to break. They're going to give up a big play and you're going to end this game and Bijan's going to have a good yards per carry. And that's going to be the story of the game. So if your offense can go out and execute early in the game like it did last week, you have a prayer. If you don't, I think you're going to have a very, very hard time just getting any type of control in this game because they're going to be able to run on you.
Yeah, and it's not, I mean, Bijan Robinson is an elite talent, but it's their run scheme. It's their commitment to the run. Tyler Allgeier had 10 carries for 64 yards in that game too. Averaged 6.4, which... So both of them were cutting them up. Cordarrelle Patterson cut him up in that game. And I mean, in my memory bank, I feel like Atlanta had the ball for like their time of possession was like 14 minutes in the fourth quarter. Like they just let Atlanta run the clock out of them. It was really a low point of the season, I think, for the Saints. And so The other thing Atlanta's going to do is they're third in the NFL in rushing attempts. Even though they're a team that doesn't always play from ahead and has a losing record, they will not stop running the ball. So the Saints do need to give them some reason to have to put this game in whichever quarterback's hands that is going to start for them.
Yeah, which sets us up for our next matchup. Will it be Taylor Heinicke or Desmond Ridder against the Saints defense? And does it matter depending on who it is? Here's the kind of separation between the two. Ridder is a slightly more effective passer. Taylor Heinicke is going to move a little bit more. We talk about the run game and Bijan Robinson. Taylor Heinicke is probably going to try to pick up some yardage on the ground, but he's been dealing with an ankle injury. He was limited all week. He's questionable to play. They did say they were feeling optimistic about Heinicke's ankle. That was a couple days ago they were talking about that, but it gets back to what's kind of been the thing that's bitten the Saints defense, is that they continue to struggle against these mobile quarterbacks.
I don't know how mobile he is with the ankle injury.
It's just in his, for some of these guys, it's like in their nature to move, and it's in their nature to run. He's likely probably going to get some sort of quarter zone shot or something like that, so that he can play to his strengths and play how he usually would in a game. Like, I don't see Taylor Heinicke just completely standing in the pocket and changing his game.
This either quarterback, it's the matchup that favors the Saints the most. The Saints secondary played great. Nick got that great stuff from Tyrann Mathieu about how the secondary, you know, came together and had that meeting last Saturday. And they said, hey, we set the tone. When we play great, when we dictate what the game's going to be like, the game usually goes that way. I like the Saints secondary being able to do the job against Heinicke or Ridder. You know, Drake London is a dangerous receiver, and he got off a little bit in that game. But that is the matchup that favors the Saints the most. It just goes back to the previous one. They have to make him throw it. They have to make it be third and seven or longer. They have to be playing with the lead. They have to make Atlanta throw the ball. And if they do, then I like the way they match up.
Right. Yeah, I agree totally. I don't have anything to add to that. I mean, like, neither one of these guys should scare you. If they do, you have significant problems in your own house. And I think the Saints secondary will be fine. It's just making sure that you're taking away the run.
Yeah, that's where we get to the last matchup ahead of Falcons at Saints. Saints secondary and how they're going to hold up against these Falcons wide receivers / tight ends. Let's start with the Falcons talent. Look, Drake London leads the Falcons in receiving yards. Kyle Pitts just behind him. Kind of both young talents that are still trying to find their way in the NFL. With these young guys, though, that you have to just pay, like, these the guys in the secondary for the Saints just have to be mindful that these are guys that can be playmakers. Yes, they're young and they're still finding their footing, but you could see both a Kyle Pitts or a Drake London break out and have a really great game if they are not on their P's and Q's this week, which, as we saw against the Rams, they lost the eye test. Alante Taylor got benched because he lost the eye test. I like what I've seen in the last week and how they've kind of handled things without Marshawn Lattimore, but it's another test for this secondary.
Well, I think it's fascinating in more of a macro sense than even a micro sense, because there is decisions that have to be made about Marshawn, and I'm sure you have all the data you need already to make that decision. Mm-hmm. If you're gonna try to trade him, if you're gonna try to keep him, how it hurts your team, what you need to replace. But if you end this season like on an extremely low point, does that create a crisis of confidence if you are leaning one direction? And it's like, man, two out of these last three, we got exposed. There was too much exposure. Do you bring back Yadam? Like, I think it just sets up something here. So I think if you have a good game, maybe you lean a little bit more into that. I don't know. I don't think it's fair to put it all on one game, but like, I think an outright collapse would maybe make you take a step back and be like, whoa, like, this might not be as good as we thought it was. The one thing that I think is super interesting, though, and let me make sure, I'm safe to say we aren't elsewhere on the script. The one thing I think people need to look at is how Alante Taylor has played in man coverage this year. He is actually in expected receptions allowed while playing man coverage, not zone, just man coverage, best in the NFL.
Really?
Best in the NFL. And that's something where you kind of maybe start looking at it and you say, like, if he was playing on the outside, maybe you could put him in more of these situations. Maybe you aren't leaving the gate open every single direction, and he can kind of focus in and use his athleticism and his skills that he's showing in the slot. And maybe that's your answer at outside cornerback if you have to make a change next year. So that's something that I'm kind of looking at a little bit. I think that his struggles have come more in, you know, the slot assignments, the zone stuff that's completely new to him this year. Maybe that's not the end. Maybe you clean that up and you have an outstanding slot corner. But I think the stuff on man is at least worth evaluating if you make changes to your secondary. where you might want to look at him on the outside.
Well, let's not forget Paulson Adebo and Alante Taylor at one point a couple of years ago were fighting for that job.
This
Paulson
year.
Adebo,
this
but it was more so heightened, you know.
Yeah.
2 years, I believe, two camps ago. Was it this camp? It's been a while.
It was this last camp.
It was this last camp.
Yeah, it was a big battle.
And
yeah.
It was, feels like 2 years ago.
I know. It feels like it was so long ago. And then they kind of said, well, he didn't lose the battle, but he's going in the slot.
Yeah.
So it could be a real option.
No, I mean, Adebo made them make that choice because he played so well. And that's one of the things that held up from training camp. The way Adebo looked in training camp, he's held up for most of the season. For whatever reason, Kyle Pitts has really struggled to live up to the hype throughout the NFL, but he's never really had a big game against the Saints. But I'm drawing a blank. Who's that? Drake London did have a couple of big catches against them. So he's a little bit of a dangerous threat, but I don't think they have the depth that concerns you. Certainly not the depth that the Rams had.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, Coach Nick is back with his money play of the week. And of course, we hear from you guys with our question of the day. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break.
Martin Wine and Spirits is home to a selection of hand-picked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and much, much more. They are family owned and operated since 1946 and specialize in wine, spirits, gourmet food, gift baskets, catering, and tasting events. They have many locations, so they're never too far away. You can check them out in Metairie, New Orleans, Mandeville, and Baton Rouge. Or if it's more convenient, you can always shop online. Whether you're a wine novice or a seasoned collector, you'll enjoy the Martin Wine and Spirit experience.
Welcome back to the Turo Hospital Studio. Let's get to our moment of the day. If the Saints do get to the playoffs, if they win this game and everything happens perfectly, what are the odds they actually beat one of these NFC teams?
We're going with a hypothetical moment of the day.
Absolutely. Look,
Mike,
I got to give some credit. I got to get credit to Mike here because he has been absolutely on top of the odds.
The playoff scenarios.
What's the playoff scenarios? So first, if they win, if they get in, what are these scenarios of who they could face?
Well, Brooke, I have bad news for you. As of now, the Cowboys will win the NFC East, and the Eagles would be the team that comes into New Orleans. If they win this game and they're hosting the playoffs, there's also the wild card scenario where the Saints are the 7 seed, so they would go play at the 2 seed, which would probably be Dallas in that scenario. But, I mean, Philly has really, really been
struggling
lately. I mean, they just lost to the Cardinals, so if we watch the Saints win 4 of their last 5 games and they look impressive and they get into the playoffs, then we probably would start talking like, well, maybe they could catch a Philly at the right time at home. But all these matchups that we just went through, I would hate. I do not like their chances of stopping Philly's run game. Philly has a receiver that could really threaten their secondary. Like, the Saints would not be favored at home against either of those teams.
What if it ended up being, is Dallas and Seattle still in the mix for
so
a potential
what would happen, so
scenario?
Dallas, the thing with Dallas and Philadelphia is the winner will be the 2 seed, the loser will be the 5 seed. 5 seed will play at the NFC South champion. Dallas would have to lose to Washington.
Okay.
Philadelphia would have to win for them to flip-flop spots. As of now, Seattle, well, I think it's Green Bay first. For the 7 seed. If Green Bay wins, I think they're the 7 seed. If they lose and Seattle wins, they're the 7 seed. If they both lose and New Orleans wins, New Orleans would be the 7 seed.
Well, look, there's been offensive improvement despite the headlines and all of that. There is offensive improvement. Nick actually broke down all the numbers in his latest article. I'll let you take it from here on how this offense really has been on an uptick. It's just been kind of that slow, steady climb, right?
Yeah, look, going back to the last one, what has happened for them to play Philly?
Just if Dallas beats Washington. If Dallas beats Washington, Philly is the 5 seed.
They should beat Washington.
How do you, like, I don't know, Philly's kind of been, like, plummeting. How do you feel about, do you think they could beat them?
I cannot stand you. Move on. All right, talk about the offensive improvement.
All right, so, I mean, look, there's a handful of interesting trends here with the offense. I mean, and they're trending in the right direction on, like, a team in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So like they've
how
been
do you think the Saints run defense will do against the tush push? Oh, wait, that's next week's show, sir.
It'd be terrible.
They couldn't stop that.
A lot of people can't.
Nobody can.
They get in their own way sometimes now, too, with the like new, they're saying that the center is, anyways.
Yeah, all right.
Stick with
next
the
week's show, next week's show.
That'll be the money segment next week.
Oh my gosh.
So look, there's a handful of things that are happening with the offense right now. I think it's fascinating, and I think it's worthy of highlighting because no one's really been more critical of the offense this year than me. And you know, they've gotten better over time. Pete Carmichael, I think, is calling plays better. I think Derek Carr is playing better. I think they're executing better. I think things have just improved across the board. And I think it's kind of fascinating. I don't think that anything that's trending should be something that influences a decision necessarily, but you have to give credit where credit's due. And I do think that Pete Carmichael and everybody is doing a better job. And this isn't like a hard sell on the offense. Like, I would still explore my options. Like, I think you have to at this point. I think that you have to try to do something better. I think you have to try to change things up. I think that you need to have something better to sell, like straight up. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's just, so I'm not saying that, but I think we should highlight it because I think it's fair to the job that they've done. And because we pointed out all the bad, I'm going to point out all the good. So these are just a handful of stats I'm going to throw out there, and we can kind of talk about what they mean when I run through this extensive list. I'll shorten it up. But points per drive, weeks 1 to 11, 1.68, 22nd in the NFL. Weeks 12 to 17, 2.08, 13th in the NFL. Red zone efficiency, weeks 1 to 11, 48.6%, 22nd in the league. 12 to 17, 57.9, 12th in the league. Third down conversions, 36.5% during that 1 to 11 window. 12 to 17, 44.2. That's 8th in the NFL. Yards per play, 1 to 11, 4.9 yards, 22nd in the league. 12 to 17, 5.3, 16th in the league. Goal-to-go efficiency, 58.8%, 25th. Weeks 12 to 17, 88.9%, 5th in the league. Number of dropbacks with pressure, they were 9th from 1 to 11. Weeks 12 to 17, 2nd lowest. Derek Carr, EPA per dropback, I already hit that one. And here are some of the reasons, just handful of things that looks like why they might have had the rapid improvement. And shout out to my guy Jim for some help with this stuff. Play action usage, weeks 1 to 11, 10.6%, 32nd in the league. Weeks 12 to 17, 20.4%, 24th in the league. Play action usage on rundowns, 32nd in the league during the first window, second window, 15th. This is the one that's just absolutely just fascinating to me. Zone coverage percentage, weeks 1 to 11, 73.1%, 10th highest in the league. That's dropped. They're now seeing it on the 23rd highest amount in the league. Man coverage, obviously, it has to go somewhere else. It was the 28th highest during that early window. The second window, it's now 9th highest. So defenses have started playing them differently. They're seeing better looks. I think that comes with more motion usage, more play action usage. I think all that stuff plays into it a little bit. And they're getting more advantageous looks. The extra practice in the red zone, obviously, is paying off in a very tangible, measurable way. They're scoring more points. They're getting more yards per play by using more of these things, creating better looks. And they are now, by almost every definition over this last five-week window, average. So that's all we were looking for the entire time.
That was a bold statement there at the end. Yeah. I wanted to know what you were going to say. Average. It's all anybody wanted.
That's all
they
needed to be the whole year. And you see it, though. They're winning games when they're average. They're going to lose to good teams when they're average because they're average. And but against bad teams, just be average. That's all
people expected too from Derek Carr when he came in.
Just be mid.
What was out there? Yeah,
I think it's a fascinating what if. What if the second half offense was what we saw over the first 8 weeks? What their record wouldn't be drastically better, but would there just be a different vibe around this? It's like everybody made up their minds on what this team was at week whatever it was, And I just wonder, it's not blowing the doors off, but it's more like what we expected.
No, it's just a nice little mid. That's all you need. Yeah, that's all you need. Yeah. It's not like a homemade cookie. It's like a soft batch, though. You know, like you get a good grandma's cookie. Like, it's just nice and mid. It's not like the homemade fresh out the oven, but like, it's fine. Yeah. You aren't like, you could even seek it out once in a while, but like, it's been better.
It's a really good analogy.
Well, hopefully the money play of the week is not mid. What you got for the money segment?
Yeah, all right. So I'm just kind of highlighting the highlight here instead of like breaking down a play in like a specific way. I mean, because I just thought this was just like, when I watched this thing back, I was like, wow. Like, and I just think people need to see kind of what happened. And it's a 2-point conversion interception by Paulson Adebo. And if you didn't appreciate it, I don't know what they showed on the TV, but man, looking at it on the coach's film, it was just like, oh my God. Like, just the way he read this going against Mike Evans here, he runs her out just kind of over the middle. Paulson's just sitting back watching. As you can see, he doesn't have anybody to pair up with over here, so he just kind of sits and watches Baker Mayfield to see where he goes with the ball. Everybody just kind of plays shallow, and they're sitting back waiting to see what happens. And as the play develops here, you got Mike right here. And man, does it look like he is wide the hell open. And Baker just doesn't get his eyes over far enough to get look at this guy. But if you see here, look at his eyes. He is looking right back at the quarterback, reading them. And he knows where he's going. But, I mean, that is a hell of a distance to go to jump a pass. So Baker thinks he's got it safe. I mean, you got your guy sitting right there. Takes just a little bit too long for the ball to come out. That thing should have been coming out. Let's go back. I mean, he should have been hitting that thing right there. As soon as he clears, like, he should have been hitting it right there. But he missed it just a little bit late, just a second late. But still, it looks like it should be there. Paulson's reading him. He's breaking on it. And you see, bang, jumps it. I mean, it's just an incredible play. Reading the quarterback, jumping there out. One of my favorite things about Paulson this year, though, is on these picks, is how determined the man is to score a touchdown.
Look at him. He's already finding the lane. He's asking for blockers. Alante's hands up.
Alante's like, man, over here. We got this whole lane. We got this whole lane. They're setting up like the flying V, like it's the Mighty Ducks. Like they're going to get like the inverted, you know, they're going to get going. And Paulson thinks he's going to hit it, man. Like he saw it right from go. He said, this is it. This is my moment.
I love
it. And he's going. Alante is just ready to engage. 64 is chugging, man. You got guys just breaking over there. But yeah, he thinks he's going to hit this thing.
Oh, keep going. I want to see if Alante hits the block.
But there he is, man. 64. Oh. 64, the
he
big
must
man.
Have. He's not in frame.
The big man just ate him up. He couldn't get there.
Colin Saunders lead block.
Look at him, man. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. You got the big guys going. And that was 78, actually. Yeah. So 64 hit the dust there. 78 got him. So
was
going, man. I thought he had it. I thought he had his lane. Hopefully he gets it next week because nobody wants to score a touchdown more than
he does.
That would have been a 2-point.
Yeah, even better. Make it weirder. Like it's even better.
I'm jumping on something Brooke will probably put in the script next week. But if we're doing season epitaph, but I think Paulson might be my MVP on the season.
Oh, that's a good pick. Yeah,
he's become. I mean, he might have been just based on his play in the first half of the season, but he's become absolutely essential with Marshawn Lattimore out of the lineup.
I want to vote to put a mic on Paulson Adebo, because I have to hear what the man is yelling when he gets an interception, because we see him just running at will, like, block for me. I need to hear it. So this is my proposal to Saints or NFL Films. Mike, if you're going to be Paulson here Adebo for this week's game, Falcons at Saints in the Dome, do us a favor and mic up some of the guys in the secondary, because it's probably must-see TV. I talked with Cam Jordan about it a few weeks ago. And he's like, oh, no, it's hilarious to hear them, because he hears them flying by. We need it. We need it. The fans need it. All right, let's get to our Martin's question of the day. Martin's is home to a wide selection of handpicked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and more. Martin's so much more than just wine. All right, the question is, over the course of the next 2 weeks, Raiders brass will meet with NFL representatives and former head coach John Gruden. If this happens, should the Saints bring him in for a year at offensive coordinator? Then if Dennis Allen, I don't want some of these fan questions. All right, I'll just read it. Then if Dennis Allen lays an egg next year, elevate Gruden to head coach.
Let's start
at the beginning.
This is such nasty phrasing.
Always. We love you guys, though. We love you guys.
I mean, I don't know about any man laying an egg, but I mean, look, to the first part, like, does it even matter? Like, Flores became DC while he was suing the league, right? So I don't even know if it's a factor, the league thing. I don't even think it's a factor at this point. And I mean, look, to answer the question, yes, they should. And look, my big prediction, like, for next season, like, you know, I'm just talking, like, this is me just thinking, like, if I was them, putting myself in them shoes, this isn't like a, you know, boy, they should sign this guy, and then they sign him the next day. Like, this isn't one of those.
Thank you for the qualifier.
Yeah, this is just this is
people know how to read Nick.
Boy, this guy would be a good fit. Like, you know what I mean? This isn't that. This is
the
just
Saints
me.
Draft Zach Bond.
this is just me. I never said that one. I just put him up on a screen and tweeted a picture. I'm breaking down his film right before the draft. Shout out to me for getting that one right. And Cesar Ruiz was on the other screen. I was 2 for 2 that day. So
it's taken a while for them, but
follow the
there.
Easter eggs, guys.
Anyhow, my thing, I think if there's a team that would just not give a damn what the league thinks, that would enjoy sticking it to the league, and look, this is just realistic, desperate enough to take any type of PR hit. A coach that's desperate enough to tie himself to something.
This team tried to sign Deshaun Watson.
Yes. So All those, and they're more desperate now than then.
Yeah.
So all those things put together, like, why not? Like, why not? It's the perfect fit. It's the perfect scenario.
You brought you got him in Derek training Carr. Camp.
Yeah. Like, just I go get him. That's my big thing. Like, if you're gonna make a move this offseason and you want to upgrade and you need a guy that needs a door open and you're gonna punch above your weight and you need to punch above your weight and he wants to get back in the football, assuming he does, he's not gonna go be a head coach right away. You got to be an OC first, I think. This is perfect for him.
And you know what I heard from a very good source? That John Gruden actually didn't get paid to be here and helping out the Saints for training camp, which to me is a guy who just wants to get back in football, loves being around the sport. You saw players interacting with him. There didn't seem to be any issues there, given the things that we have heard from his past. But that was super surprising to me to hear that John Gruden was likely not getting paid. That just from a source that he just wanted to be here and wanted to kind of help them and figure out Derek Carr in this new offense.
Yeah, he's the guy who spent like his first 10 years right, where he wasn't coaching, like creating this coaching clinic and having his tapes in his vault. And like he never quits. But I still wonder if he'd be an offensive coordinator, like if he would do that work or if he's interested in a job like that. But yeah, I think it's on the table. But I mean, I think a lot of anything that will bring life back into this offense and bring life back to Derek Carr has to be priority number one for this team this offseason. The second part of that question was pretty ridiculous, only because if they hired John Gruden
to be under DA
and he revived the offense, then Dennis Allen wouldn't get fired.
Correct.
But if John Gruden came in and it didn't work, then they're not promoting John Gruden to head coach. So I don't think there's a scenario where you bring him in for a year and like he's being groomed as the replacement.
There's nothing I think though that could look. I mean, there's obviously all kinds of other issues here. Just isolating the football. Like, I don't think there's anything you could do that could get people more excited about just strictly, let's put a hard box around this football than that. Like, if you did that, people, I think you're still selling. I mean, I think it just creates like a different feel. Like, just, okay, there's a way to get this done. They got a coach, but there's a lot of stuff that you would have to work out with your team and all that stuff. And that's just, you know, that's beyond anything we can analyze from here.
All right, last topic. Sorry, Edwin, I jumped the gun. Let's get back to our fantasy segment. Chris Olave, over under 100 receiving yards against the Falcons.
It's a big number. He hit 110. You're like over under 35 total rushing yards or whatever you did.
I know, it was pretty bad last week.
Yeah, he had 114 in the first half in the last game. He's got the ankle injury, but I wrote about this week. Even though he had the ankle injury, the concussion, and the flu, in three of his last five games, he has three of the four highest yardage totals of his career. Mm-hmm. I think he's just playing the best football of his career. And if he was healthy, it'd be all the better. 100? Sure, I'll go over. He's their main guy on offense, especially if they don't have Alvin.
Yeah.
I'll take the under just because he's banged up. There's just no other reason, but I think it's a good number.
I'm leaning toward under 100, but he was able to get there so quickly against the Falcons, but that was before the ankle injury. Before we get to our game predictions, Original Soul in the live chat just put this crazy comment in here that I got to read. It's going to be crazy when the Panthers beat the Bucks, the Bears beat the Packers, and the Cardinals beat the Seahawks, just for the Saints to lose to the Falcons on a last second field goal. Why would you wish that on us? We got to be there and cover the game. Don't do that to us.
It's not out of the realm of the possibility. I know. Either. That's the worst
it could
part
come down
of the whole
to that.
Scenario. How deflating would that
and
be?
And they end at the same
pull
time.
Off this win. Yeah.
Aren't they playing at
noon?
No,
the other ones are later. The wild card games are later. But yeah, but like if Carolina pulls off the surprise and beats Tampa Bay and the Saints don't.
That would just be the epitome of this season, though, wouldn't
it? It really would.
It's just
really
so up and down.
And look, you said let's get into predictions. I feel good about the Saints and the things they've shown us, but I would make this a pick 'em. If I'm Vegas in this situation, if I have to pick, I think I'm going to pick the Saints because I think Atlanta's been playing pretty lousy lately. They just lost to Carolina 2 weeks ago. But again, I don't think the Saints have figured out the formula for stopping their run game. I would not bet a dollar or give a point to either side. I think this is a pick 'em game. I really do.
Can I put a stipulation on if Alvin Kamara plays?
Sure.
I think it'll be like a 3-point difference if Alvin Kamara is in or out. I think if Alvin Kamara is not up and Kendre Miller dealing with this illness and him coming back, I just don't see them being able to move the ball very efficiently. They would have to move Taysom Hill into the run game, which we haven't necessarily seen a whole lot of. It'd be great, but we just don't see it a lot. And what are you going to do? Rely on Lynn Bowden Jr.? Like, Alvin Kamara and potentially Kendre Miller both being out in this game just screams to me leaning toward Falcons. But I think if Alvin Kamara finds a way to get on the field and from what we are hearing, he is doing everything he can. I mean, night and day, working on that ankle, rehabbing it. It is truly going to be a game time decision. If he's up and playing in this game, I think the Saints win.
I think the Saints are winning, no matter what. Yep.
No matter what?
Taking them. Yep. I feel good about it.
Like, how good? What's the score prediction?
Narrow victory. But narrow I think you're going to find a way to win. I don't know. I mean, why not? Why
are we
not
putting a Peyton Turner sack counter? Somebody said Peyton Turner will have 3 sacks. That's...
No, he won't.
Whoa. Look, maybe one? First game back?
Yeah, we'll see.
If he makes a play, it'll be a flash and dash. And I hope nobody judges their future. I mean,
of course they will. Of course.
Based on him looking a little rusty, how can he not?
He will look rusty. But no matter what, look, a lot of matchups, a lot of storylines. It's going to be a fun one in the Dome. I know Tyrann Mathieu was calling on Saints fans to ride with them in this last home game in the Superdome. It should be a good atmosphere for the season finale, for the regular season finale.
This time, I think the people buying them will be Saints fans who want to go see Saints Falcons. I think it'll be full, and I think it'll be mostly Saints fans as opposed to some recent home games.
I mean, the Falcons fans aren't traveling here.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
You don't think so?
No, not for this. Not for this.
Falcons fans don't travel well. I feel not like I've this. Usually I mean, seen
there's
them
no, there's no momentum behind that team. I mean, this isn't one where you're like, okay, let me buy a last minute ticket and get there to see them finish out of the playoffs. Like, I just don't see why they'd be here.
Well, we will be there. We will be in studio for our 9 o'clock. We're actually going to go 30 minutes early. We're going to go from 9 to about 10 o'clock, 10:30-ish for our live pregame question and answer show presented by Matt Bowers Alder Group. And then we will all be in the Dome, and then we'll be talking about it live after the game. We'll see you guys there.